You're listening to Tech Talk Radio, proudly sponsored by D-Link, building networks for people.
In the communications sector, there is a revolution taking place.
Look how far we've come. A third of the music released last year in this country was not even released on a CD.
Do you use a credit card online?
No, I live in Russia.
I'm concerned about the way the company's being run and the fiber to the node network.
Unless we can have clarity that we will not be subjected to further separation, we are not in a position to lodge an RFP bid.
You can't make it a technical game because the very people who are trying to protect are smarter than you.
We want to really change the world by making things so special you've got to have it.
On air, on the internet, and on the pod, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Hello everybody and welcome to this week's edition of Tech Talk Radio. I'm Andrew McComb. If your family is like mine, that is, you have young children who just love watching the same movie over and over and over again, but don't yet know about the care and maintenance of DVD media, then maybe it's time to invest in a device which serves movies off a computer at the push of a button. One thing that's blatantly obvious is when it comes to technology, nothing is ever as simple as first appears. And connecting a computer to a TV is no different. But things have become a little easier in recent times, and the cash investment has also diminished. So if you're looking to streamline the viewing of electronic media in the living room, then this could be a good holiday project over the next few months. Last week, I picked up a Western Digital TV Live box from the local white goods retailer. This sub-$200 purchase caught my eye because at first glance it had everything that I needed: HDMI, high definition, file serving, and network connectivity with both wireless and Ethernet. How good's this, I thought to myself. And for the price, I was prepared to take the risk that it just may not perform as I'd hoped. It even supports external USB devices and has two ports. Taking electricity for granted, the two most important connections you need close by to your home entertainment system is a coax point to the TV antenna and Ethernet. Some of today's modern TVs and Blu-ray players need internet access to extend the range of content on offer. In fact, my home entertainment system has its own gigabit switch. Decadent? No, not really. Overkill? Definitely not. I successfully connected the WTV Live box into the network using a spare port on the hub and the HDMI cable straight into the TV. And guess what? It worked straight out of the box. Within moments of turning the device on, it had connected into the home domain and internet, and I was successfully watching an Avatar trailer in full high definition, which I'd downloaded off the Apple site earlier. How easy was that? The WDTV Live box also has a built-in YouTube and Flickr viewer, so after frustratingly keying the words Monty Python in on the on-screen keyboard, the family was whistling along to Always Look on the Bright Side of Life within seconds of clicking search. In the next few weeks, I'll assess the WAF, the wife acceptability factor, as well as how well the kids take to it. It's relatively simple to navigate your way around the device, but that's for someone like me, and first impressions are very good. It was easy to set up and easy to operate. Now to find a good DVD ripping package and to find out what bugs lie hidden in version 1.0 software. Maybe finally I've seen the last of the scratched DVDs that are all too readily found buried in the strangest places around the house.
This week on Tech Talk Radio.
It's time to revisit email again. To pop or not to pop, that's the question. Microsoft denies Windows 7 was modelled on the Mac OS, Twitter suspends retweet services, and we look at syncing devices such as Apple's iPhone for free. First up though, here's Dr. Ron with the latest from the Tech Talk News Desk.
This is Tech Talk News.
This week on Tech Talk News, the world's first virus for the Apple iPhone originates from Wollongong in New South Wales. Australia's Deputy Prime Minister is criticised over the launch of a new website. Telstra and Optus get serious about premium rate SMS scams. And Nokia issues a worldwide recall for 14 million battery chargers. Welcome to Tech Talk News. A student from Wollongong in New South Wales last week claimed credit for what analysts have described as the first computer virus targeted at the Apple iPhone. The virus perpetuates a common internet joke known as rickrolling and infects the phone by changing the lock wallpaper to an image of the 80s pop singer Rick Astley. The virus only infects iPhones which have undergone the jailbreak process. Additionally, users would have to have installed a program called SSH or Secure Shell and not change the default password in order to become infected. The author of the virus, 21-year-old Ashley Towns, described it as a security experiment that got out of hand. Mr. Towns said the program did not harvest personal information from iPhone handsets, and it was not his intention to benefit in any way from the virus. A spokesperson for internet security firm Sophos said that it was difficult to estimate how many iPhone users in Australia had been infected, but that the number could be in the hundreds. Australia's Deputy Prime Minister Julia Gillard has been heavily criticised for the launch of a new website which compares school performance results. Many school principals say the website will effectively name and shame schools by providing unfair comparisons of students' academic achievements. But Ms. Gillard spoke on government radio last week and insisted that the new website cannot be used as a school league table, but instead provides information to the community that's never before been available.
I understand there's nervousness about change, but, you know, from my point of view, it's all about the kids, and to the extent that the adults are a bit stressed or discomforted as we move through a period of change, then we've got to keep our eyes here on the goal, and it's all about the kids.
Ms. Gillard last week gave principals from around the country their first look at the controversial website called MySchool, which will compare nearby schools or those that share a similar socioeconomic profile. Each school will have a profile page that includes details such as student-teacher ratios, attendance rates, and what happens to high school leavers. Ms. Gillard said this information would help identify why certain schools did better or worse than others. Following significant debate in the mainstream media over the abuse of premium rate SMS services, both Telstra and Optus last week said they were getting serious about conforming with industry codes of practice. US-based specialist WMC Global will be contracted to monitor mobile premium rate SMS services and advertising to ensure compliance with respective contract requirements and industry codes. WMC will intercept in-market TV, print, and web-based advertisements for mobile premium SMS services, then test the services to ensure operation in accordance with individual carrier codes of conduct. WMC will then report the results to Telstra and Optus. A report by ITY last week said that monitored services would include chat, televoting, and premium content downloadable to mobile devices, such as ringtones, wallpapers, games, videos, and text alerts. The announcement comes after Chairman of the Australian Competition and Consumer Commission, Mr. Graeme Samuels, said in March that the telecommunications industry was now being put on notice. Mr. Samuels said that misleading advertising, unfair contracts, inadequate disclosure, and subscription scams are all in the ACCC sites, and that standards must improve or carriers would risk increased scrutiny and action. And the world's biggest mobile phone manufacturer, Nokia, last week issued a global recall for 14 million battery chargers, owing to fears that some models could be faulty and cause electric shocks. A Nokia spokesperson said that chargers in Australia, New Zealand, China, Britain, Brazil, and Argentina were unlikely to be included in the recall, but that customers should check model numbers just to be safe. Nokia said the potentially dangerous chargers were models AC3E and AC3U, manufactured between the 15th of June and the 9th of August this year. Also, the AC4U model, manufactured between the 13th of April and the 25th of October this year. The AC3E charger was marketed in Europe, while the two others were sold to the North and Latin American markets and were all manufactured by a Nokia subcontractor. I'm Dr. Ron, and that's your tech update for this week.
Previously on Tech Talk Radio.
Adam's here. Good thing about it tonight is that those responsible for the video cameras in the studio are not here.
So who's pulling the strings? Is this?
That's the question.
Well,
45 minutes to load a page on my Telstra phone.
Yeah, what's not mentioned in that story is there's actually a secret treaty.
Oh, so dangerous. So the WAF is oblivious to it at the moment.
That's part of an indication of the success of what he's done, of his strategy.
Banning, the distributors,
distribution.
Blah, 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 blah. That's when I lost it. I won't tell you what I said next.
I generally hold my mobile phone number fairly near and dear to my chest, as a lot of people do these days.
What I would do is ring your provider.
But it's perhaps never been done in Australia on this scale.
Let's play the devil's advocate here. Could you imagine if this happened in Australia?
I'm not in a chat room for teenage girls.
Everybody's a teenage girl on the internet.
Entertaining, informative, and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. The panel on Tech Talk Radio.
Yes, just remember what Adam said. Everyone's a teenage girl on the internet. And isn't that very true these days? Hello, everybody. Welcome to Tech Talk Radio. I'm Andrew McComb. Sitting across in front of me today is two very capable gentlemen in the form of JD.
Good evening.
How are you, Justin?
I'm better this week.
Yeah, you had a bit of a dreaded last week.
I was a bit croaky last week. I'm still a bit croaky today.
Oh, well, well done for making it in. Did you listen from the sick bed?
No, I didn't.
Was it that bad?
Rest and recuperate, and then lots of lemon drinks and so forth.
Anyway, sounding good. A bit croaky, sounding good. Graham, evening. How are you?
Good evening, Andrew. Doing well?
That's good. That's good. Been a big week for you this week? Anything exciting happened or no?
No, fairly ordinary week in tech. It's been a little bit in the news, which is interesting to talk about. So.
Well, that's good. Hopefully we'll get to the rundown this evening before we get to the manic minute at the end of the program. Dr. Ron will be joining us in the not-too-distant. He's just delayed in traffic a little bit, but yes, that's what happens here. And tonight, let's start off with a big cheerio to a new station that's taking us this evening in central northern New South Wales. In a lovely town called Weewa.
Fantastic.
So if you're listening to us in Weewa, good evening to you.
Hello, Weewa.
What's the collective noun of people listening to us in Weewa?
Weewarians.
That's good. I like that. Yeah, Weewarians. Yeah, so good evening to you all. And Weewa is somewhere between, if you get the ruler out, I had to go to Google Maps to do this because if you're listening, I'm sorry, I didn't. I had to look you up on Maps.
We're only Victorians, you'll have to excuse us.
And I did actually find them thanks to Google. They're great, that Google Maps service, yes. Isn't it? You put Weewa, New South Wales in, and it's sort of draw a line between Bourke and Coffs Harbour, a horizontal line, it's sort of in the middle.
Okay.
Just down from near Narrabri.
It's got to be a nice part of the world.
Absolutely. Probably a tad warm too. So anyway, good evening, Weewarians.
Oh, if you're listening to us. It up now.
Yeah, it's there, isn't it? So on 1611. So g'day. Welcome aboard.
AM radio.
Yes. Romantic, isn't it?
Fantastic.
We have a chat room for all you Weewarians, and there is one. The boss is in there at the moment. G'day, Gold 1611. We have a chat on the forum. So come along and say g'day to us at chat.techtalkradio.com.au. Join the mad group that is slowly building there at the moment.
Although, of course, if you're listening in Weewa, you're probably better to go to forum.techtalkradio.com.au because, the chat might not be so active when it's on air in Weewa.
Oh, well, they're taking us live.
Oh, they're taking us live, are they?
Yes.
Oh, okay. I didn't realise that.
Yeah,
oh,
live.
Fantastic.
Absolutely, as live as we can be. So come along and have a chat. And we do have a forum. Go on, Graham. Tell them about the forum.
The forum is fantastic and recently resurrected.
It works.
Graham let the smoke out of the components not so long ago. And it didn't
work. Smoke came out of my server, but that wasn't a good day. But Dr. Ron actually has resurrected it with all new schemes and look and feel, and it's really performs quite nicely these days. And what it is, it's a great place you can go. You can just register, make up yourself a name and a password, and you can get in there and participate in chat that's not real-time chat. So someone can post a message today, you can go and add a comment to it tomorrow, someone else can comment at that, and conversations will build up over time, and what happens on the forum is that we get a lot of useful information gets posted from time to time. Somebody will ask an interesting question, and somebody will come up with a really interesting answer, and it'll stay there as a record of that conversation. So you can go and search for what interests you.
Yes, and then you'll get Googled in the Google database, and you know when your responses come up.
Absolutely. So it's a great place to go for technical discussions or to ask a question, and all the presenters that have a look there, and a lot of the listeners look there, so If you ask a question there, someone will find you an answer. That's kind of the good thing about that.
So come along and join us.
Forum.techtalkradio.com.au.
Correct. Links to it from our website too. So if you get lost,
everything's linked from the website.
Just Google us. You'll find us.
So Tech Talk Radio.
Welcome aboard, Weewarians.
Mm.
Hopefully we haven't got anyone's... I hope that's the Rye Collective now.
I'm sure we'll find out. Someone will advise us if we're wrong.
Absolutely. Now, tonight's show, some interesting stuff that's happening. Twitter's obviously making news again at the moment.
Twitter can't decide whether you want to retweet or not.
No, that's correct. Microsoft have been given grief by Apple, saying that, hey, you copied us.
Well,
that's to be...
didn't someone from Microsoft actually kind of sort of admit it and then they had to retract it?
Oh, something like that. I don't know. We'll find out about that. We're going to be talking about Pop and IMAP in the opening of the show. I sort of did a survey amongst our audience, and not many people knew the difference between Pop and IMAP.
Oh, really?
But, yes, all two of them at the time.
Right. Yeah, now these are methods that a mail program like Outlook or something like that will use to get your mail from your internet provider.
That's right. And with the advent of all these new personal devices, such as smartphones and netbooks and things like that...
Yeah, people are coming across those settings and they're trying to set up these things.
So we'll be talking a little bit about that. And
we can point you in the right direction, help you to make some decisions to get a better result for yourself.
And because we love surveys on Tech Talk Radio, we're going to be talking about what Aussies do in front of the screen at home.
Oh dear.
Just for if we get to that one, right down the very bottom of the rundown. So there you go. Going to be an interesting night. So let's kick it all off, and we'll talk a little bit about Twitter, because we're all Twitterers here.
Ooh.
The collective noun of Twitterers is tweeters? I don't know. Tweeters, maybe. Send in your collective nouns.
I don't know. I'm not sure that I'm part of that group.
Maybe not.
Mm.
Maybe not. Anyway, Twitter has, for those of you who are not familiar with what Twitter is, and you've probably heard of it by now, it's a wonderful service which lets you use short messaging, not unlike the SMS in your mobile phone, but instead of sending it to your next-door neighbour or the person down the street or on the other side of the world as a one-on-one, you blurt it out for the whole world to see, and people can read it on Twitter. And there's things like trending topics, which is what the world is talking about.
And you can follow people that might tweet or you know, send out messages that might be of interest to you.
Might be mildly amused by.
Interesting or amusing or whatever it might happen to be. So you can, for example, you can follow the Tech Talk Radio tweet service and you'll get all sorts of tech news will pop up during the course of the day.
Yeah. So that's what Twitter is. And it's a fairly, well, put it this way, it's taken off. And people use it globally. And, you know, for example, last night, Rove McManus, who runs used to run the program on Channel 10, decided to call it quits. And as a result, Rove trended to number one globally because I think the rest of the world's asleep when we're awake. I think, isn't that how it works?
That's one of the good things about Twitter in Australia is that,
it's all ours.
When we're using it, America often isn't. So, the Australian topics tend to go well during our time zones when we're on.
Yeah, and then, of course, remember when Hey Hey, It's Saturday. It's a great way to interact with television programs. It's seeming to... Because all the networks and the broadcasters wanted to bring in this interactive TV, but they haven't managed to do it because I think Twitter's doing that role for them and they've got no control over it.
Yes, and that's probably the best bit about it. And it's... Yeah, if you follow people who like the same sort of television as you are, they'll often tweet when interesting programs are coming up and they'll let you know to watch them.
Anyway, that's what Twitter is. And there is a feature called retweeting, which is where you say, oh, Tech Talk Radio said something useful, we're going to retweet it. Well, anyway, Twitter has been forced to pull its retweet service after it was hit by technical problems just days after rolling out the service to a limited number of accounts. Now, apparently the firm posted a status announcement on its page saying we've been contending with elevated number of errors since last night, and they've ruled out a number of causes of the problem, but still working on it to reduce the errors on the site. So since then, posted the following update, we're continuing to make changes and seeing the errors return to a more acceptable level. So if you're using the Twitter retweet facility, there's lots of other retweet
facilities.
Now,
people have always retweeted people, so...
Which courtesy. I've always assumed was just forwarding a message, like you forward
an
SMS.
I assume they've had to do it by copy and pasting, have they?
It depends. There's many clients. That's a little program that
some clients have retweeting built in.
Yes.
Okay.
So basically what you do is, let's say I'm scrolling down and go, oh, Dr. Ron said something good. I click retweet and it automatically puts me on there and him on there and it goes out into the world.
So, there's a lot of things that happen on Twitter that even the Twitter developers didn't expect Twitter to do, like retweeting and like hashtags.
Mm.
So, Yeah, obviously they've decided to add this feature to their own website.
Yeah, correct.
And it's not quite gone as smoothly as they'd hoped.
No, no. And I'll tell you what, some of our listeners have got memories like elephants out there at the moment. I was just reading the chat, and TARDIS3 has come up and said, oh, I was critical of Twitter when Dr. Ron first mentioned it. Yes, I was. But I saw the light, and I'm not afraid. I even have an iPhone now, but that's another story. And I have got some more. The adventures of Andrew's iPhone will continue later this evening because it's an interesting journey. Dr. Ron is in here. Dr. Ron is here. He's waving to us at the moment. He's actually having another show on the other side of the glass here at the studio. So anytime you like, Dr. Ron, feel free to walk into the studio. Yeah, good. Thank you very much. So anyway, there you go. What else should we talk about? Windows 7 modeled on Mac OS. What did you think of this being a Mac enthusiast, JD, when you saw it? Did you think, oh, that's a ripoff of the Mac GUI? Did you think that, or was... Is this just someone speculating and trying to, you know, storm in a teacup thing?
No, oh, I think it is. A bit of a storm in a teacup.
Yeah?
Hmm.
So we shouldn't be worried about it or shouldn't be talking about it. But some of the people in there have got their noses out of joint about it. Do you reckon it is?
I think there's probably some evidence to say that some things in the Windows 7 interface have been inspired by some things that have been done on the Mac.
Oh, and people have been saying that for decades, though. So.
And that's my point.
That, I think it's time to get over
that. Gone backwards and forwards, and think features and developments have gone in both directions over the last however many years we've been working on graphical user interfaces since the 1980s or something, or even earlier.
Well, depending
earlier.
Who you are, yes. Yeah. Xerox back in the 70s, but yeah. Well,
so I think these features have always bounced backwards and forwards a little bit, and yeah, there were some interesting things in the Apple, what's it called, the dock?
Yep,
that have made their way into the new Windows 7 taskbar.
Which, in fact, wasn't an Apple invention anyway, of course. So most of these things have been invented by somebody else at some point. And on the old Mac OS, there was something equivalent to the dock. I can't quite remember what it was called now, but it
the
was
dashboard or something. I don't know.
Yeah, it was original. Yeah. It was a third-party application at one point. Apple bought it and included it, and now the dock's the current generation.
Yeah, good ideas tend to float around and spin off new ideas, and what goes around comes around.
I guess the difference is between buying a product that you want to include in your repertoire versus just copying somebody else's. Well, let's not go there.
It's not a direct copy. It's certainly it's extending and developing an idea a step further. Perhaps it's not a direct. It's not so. Windows 7 certainly doesn't look like the dock. It looks quite different.
I think they might have caught a bit more flack back in the good old days when it went from DOS to Windows 3.1.1. That's probably when it all started.
It was actually
wasn't it?
Windows 1 was the defining moment of litigation.
Windows 1? Was there a Windows 1? Really?
Not for
Never
very
saw the
long.
Light of
yeah,
day,
it
really.
Wasn't, it wasn't technically a Microsoft product. It was written by Microsoft for IBM, is that right? Something like that?
That's OS.
Okay. I'm getting my OS's mixed up. Sorry.
So, yeah, Windows 1 was thought to be too much of a rip-off of the Mac operating system. It was pulled very, very quickly.
Okay, there you go. So they have, it's just evolved. Mm. And I reckon, let's look further down the track. It's probably all going to, you know, assimilate into the Borg, and it'll be one not so long down the track, because it'll all do the same
well,
thing, won't
yeah,
it?
Well, yeah, some of the new ideas from Windows 7 might make its way into other operating systems. You know, these ideas tend to go in all directions.
I think the two defining things, for me at least, is the difference between the two operating systems being the built specifically for hardware, and you know it will work in the case of OS X, versus I'll buy whatever I want to buy according to the specs I want and build it to match Windows 7, or in fact Linux for that matter. And then the underpinning core, so OS X being Unix-based and Windows being DOS-based, effectively, is really the fundamental differences, and it's a bit like Ford and Holden drivers. There'll be people that don't agree, and there'll be people that cross-platform, and there'll be other people that disappear off into
a different... That's a good way of looking at it, Ford and Holden. Essentially, they're the same vehicles. They've just got a different skin on them, really, haven't they? Maybe a little bit... they'll be taking a task
on
the chat.
And in the same way, design features tend to go backwards and forwards. One of them had cup holders, and the next year, the other one's got cup holders as well.
Heaven forbid.
You can imagine that in a V8 type arrangement anyway. All right, so Microsoft has moved quickly to dismiss comments made by one of its managers earlier this week that the Windows 7 user interface was based on that of the Mac system. In an interview published recently on PCR, Microsoft Group partner managing Simon Aldous admitted that many people think that the OS is fantastic and very easy to use. So, yeah, I guess, and Macs has been pretty good like that too. You know, it's a great system, so why not bring the best of both worlds together as one and try and see how it works. Like, there's even, what do they call them, widgets now on Windows 7. Like, you know, you used to have on the Mac where you used to get your widgets, and I think I'm using one at the moment for processor speed. I've got the chat up at the moment, so I can't quite see. But, yeah, they're good. They just plug in and they work, and I'm sure you can get them for weathers and things like that as well. So, All right. Dr. Ron is here. He's currently setting up, and that's JD, who's suffering from a cold. So excuse the cough you might hear from time to time. Now, one of the other things, I was going to talk briefly about my experience with the iPhone that I've bought for my science project here for Tech Talk Radio. My assignment during the course of the week was to actually get the device syncing for free. Syncing, not as in floating in water and falling to the bottom of a bucket, but
you don't want to do that to an iPhone.
You want to have synchronizing the
same data, in particular probably your emails on your iPhone as on all your other devices.
That's right. And
your calendar?
Calendar and contacts in particular. Because when you're out in the field, by the way, JD, I just cracked beautifully. Have you seen an application called Bump? That's really good.
Where you hit the...
Correct. You have to actually physically hit someone to get their contact details. I quite enjoyed that at the office the other day. Hi, Lauren, if you're listening. So, I've gone through this syncing process, which is sort of working because I didn't want to put any money into it because I don't believe in putting money into people to do what you can do for free. Because if you look at Apple's Mobile Me, that's what that does. It syncs everything beautifully. But you pay, I think it's $90 a year or something like that for the privilege of doing it. And, of course, there's a lot of other cloud people out there doing it. You know, everything ends up in the cloud, and then it comes back down to the machines they're connecting to it. But I've written it up, and I've put it on the Tech Talk Radio website. And if you go, you can click the banner on the left-hand side, and you can see exactly what I've used and how I've used it. But in essence, I've used two programs. One, or we'll put it this way, two Google applications and a free website to do what I want to do. There's NuvoSync, which syncs my calendars between the device, whether it's an E71 or a Nokia device or an iPhone, it's irrelevant. But it syncs your calendar through the NuvoSync site and then back down to your Exchange, which is a really handy feature to do. So the contacts work really well. Sorry, the calendar works really well. And the contacts are synced through a Google application, which you have to dig in for. It's in Google Labs. I've got all the details on our website, so if you want to go and have a play with it. And that syncs all the contacts across from the iPhone to the Google account, your Gmail account, and then you use... Sorry, that syncs from your Outlook to the Gmail account. I've got to get it right. Read the doc. It's all there. But it's all working, and it's all for free.
Now, the iPhone does have the ability to sync directly with your Exchange server.
Yeah, but only one.
Ah, is that
the
problem?
So you get to choose your Exchange server or Google, because it treats Gmail as an Exchange server. So you can have one or the other, but not both.
Okay.
So, anyway.
In fact, you can have Exchange or anything else.
Correct. But Gmail is treated as an Exchange client.
Oh, okay.
So that's part of it. You pick one or the other. So, anyway.
Whereas I'm syncing with Outlook on my desktop, so that works locally.
Well, there's Google Calendar Sync, which is an app that you need for the calendar, which gets your desktop to Google. And there's the Contact Sync, which is also another Google product, which gets it to Gmail. And then Gmail just talks via NuvoSync to your device and via... what was the other one? Calendar Sync, I think it was. NuvoSync for the device. Yeah, and the Gmail account talks also nicely to your contacts. Anyway, have a read. It's all there.
It'd be nice to have a common protocol, wouldn't it?
Wouldn't it be good? Someone will do it very shortly. Dr. Ron, Movember.
Hello, hello, hello. Movember it is. Can you tell?
Yes. Let me turn you down a little bit.
No, not at all.
Not a bit. Your eyebrows come down to your mouth for a drink.
Mark Diggins was having a go at me about this a couple of years ago as well. He said, what's that disgrace of a thing you've got above your upper lip? It is Movember, and Movember is where we grow a mow to raise money and money for and awareness about men's health issues like prostate cancer and also issues like clinical depression. So that's what Movember's all about. You can Google that and have a look. And if you'd like to throw money at me for growing a mow, then please feel free. You can donate.
Goes to a good course, doesn't it?
Just go to a good course. You can have a look on the Movember page. I'll put links on the forum. Sorry about my tardiness this evening.
I'm glad you could make it.
Yes,
that's good.
Yes, we're listening on the way in. And thinking, oh, I might sit out in the car park here and just listen to, listen to an entertaining technology
program. Apparently it is good radio. I haven't heard it for a while on air. It's sort of always in here.
Yeah, it's all right. It's all right. Good job last week too. I was absent last week.
Time flies. Did you know that we're going to WeeWa tonight?
Well, yes, I heard about the WeeWarians. I thought that was something that was on the top of an ambulance. I suppose that's, an apt term to use. But welcome to everyone in WeeWa. It's great to have you on board.
Yes, listening to us on Gold 1611 up there.
Yeah, Graham covered off all the forum addresses, I think, and chat room addresses.
The forum and the chat, yeah.
Yeah, you can also follow us on Twitter, if you like, tech_talk_radio is
correct.
Our Twitter account to follow if you're active on Twitter.
And judging by the number of web cameras sitting in the studio in front of I can count four at the moment, there's got to be a place online where we can watch, which I think is Ustream.
There is ustream.tv/techtalkradioau, and it'll be a live now button, and click on the go to show page button. ustream.tv/techtalkradioau.
You can see Dr. Ron's Mo for real.
Mo for Movember, that's right.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Anyway, we've actually been sticking to the rundown since you've not been here, so this is really quite good. We'll see how we go for
the rest. Is it Dr. Ron's fault that we never stick to the rundown?
Oh, might be. Who knows? Can't point the fingers here.
What are you trying to say here?
Nothing at all. Nothing at all. But your bit's coming up on the next item. But before briefly, Apple unveils a massive patch update. This came out today, actually. Apple has released its sixth security update for its Mac operating system this year with a huge 32 out of 58 accompanied by the phrase may lead to arbitrary code execution, which in plain English means that someone can hack your system remotely by doing something, which obviously is the vendor jargon. Included in the patches were five specifically aimed at vulnerabilities in Snow Leopard, which is the new OS X 10.6, which has come under some form of I wouldn't call it rave reviews, but there's been some issues with it, so maybe this is going to fix things. What do you think, JD? Is this?
We'll have to speak to Adam Turner, because he's been battling away with Snow Leopard on his Apple machines.
It's funny, we can't put the faders up.
He hasn't had a good time with it, has he?
No, you can't leave the faders up in the studio when you mention OS X. So do you know much about these patches and the bugs?
Not a great deal. I'm still a Tiger person, so I haven't got to Leopard in any great way yet.
Maybe hindsight was a good thing. There's also some patches for QuickTime 6.4, which I use at work quite regularly. So, if you're an Apple user, welcome to the world of patches, because Microsoft do it just as well. I think in this time round, it's Mac's go, so we'll see what happens.
There's always an update for the Mac software. There's always something lurking there waiting to be upgraded. Sometimes it's just a Java upgrade. They do those fairly regularly. There's security patches every month or two, so it's nothing terribly unusual.
Yeah.
The point release 10.6.2 is the latest version of Snow Leopard, which is meant to have resolved a lot of the bugs that people were reporting early on. And I'm still waiting to hear back from Adam to see how he went.
Yeah, I was just going to pick up on that, JD. I saw a tweet of his during the week, and I'm just frantically trying to find it here. He said, credit where credit's, something along the lines of credit where credit's due. He'd done the upgrade, and he was quite happy. It had fixed a lot of the difficulties that he was experiencing.
Ah, well, that's good news.
I'll find it, though. Keep talking amongst yourselves.
Well, one point we always make when these patches come out, that any operating system, any modern operating system, is sufficiently complex that there will always be patches and updates during its entire useful life. And that's the same for Mac and for Windows and for Linux and for any other credible operating system these days. It's not at all unusual. It's a good thing that developers are keeping up to date and fixing problems as they arise.
It's a good thing that this sort of maintenance is dynamic and it's happening all the time.
Yes, all right. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio, proudly sponsored by D-Link, building networks for people.
Microsoft are opening up Windows 7 to advertisers. What do you reckon about that?
What does that mean?
Okay.
Stunned.
I'm not at all sure that this is a good idea.
No, Microsoft has taken unprecedented steps of allowing marketeers to rebrand its new Windows 7 operating system. Yes, that's going
to
go down
to
well.
Rebranded,
according to
I've
this.
I've noticed it all over the TV. There's little, particularly on Channel 7, for obvious reasons, there's this watermark alongside the, it's Channel 9, sorry, the MSN 9 logo now has a Windows 7 attachment, I've noticed.
Does it? Well, there you go. Well, they've got a lot to lose, really, haven't they, when you think that Channel 9 have teed up with Microsoft and if they went to Channel 7, well, what would 9 have then? 9 Yahoo wouldn't quite ring well would it? Anyway, Redmond announced yesterday that Windows 7 theme experiences, which are the backgrounds and the foregrounds and the sounds, you know, the theme that your computer takes on, are currently being trialed by a handful of big name brands, including Ducati, Porsche, and 20th Century Fox.
So they're going to ship these sorts of schemes with the Windows distributions, are they?
Well, I have a feeling that might end up as foistware when you go down to 20th Century Fox and download get your free film and complimentary on your thing.
Or they may arrive on your machine with your Windows updates even.
Yeah.
Yeah, they could even do.
Hey, look, at 100 new themes and they're all product placement.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. Wouldn't be surprised at all.
Yeah, next you'll get the software one, and then you'll get a soft drink one, and then you'll get a telephone company one. Imagine the Telstra one. What would that do?
I'm shuddered to think.
There was a report, I don't know whether it mattered to the show, but there was a report about Apple posting a patent for including advertising as part of an operating system. So you know how you can get cut-down versions of software where if you get it for free, you get advertising plastered all over your application.
Oh, yes, like the Google toolbar that they try to put
particularly in iPhone applications.
Like
but something like that, actually in OS X, where you get a cheaper version of the OS, presumably, because you get these ads plastered all over it. And they've actually, apparently, bought a company that's responsible for doing that sort of online advertising. So it's not particularly unique to Microsoft. It's just a different way of advertising other people's products in your operating system.
Could be good if you're a corporate. You could roll it out across your corporate desktop. That'd be a good way of putting a screensaver. Or
I can't see it being very popular with users.
No.
Mm.
But then again, most corporate desktops aren't supposed to be popular with users, are they?
Hmm.
The whole thing looking like your whole theme, your corporate look and feel.
But you've always been able to corporatize Windows desktop installations.
This could be easier.
Is going a step different. This is a step in a different direction. This is displaying advertising to the user.
And, which, again, maybe I don't have an issue with if you get the operating system for free. But if I've paid for it, I kind of expect it to be mine, not somebody else's.
Anyway, the Windows theme experience includes Internet Explorer 8 add-ons, Windows 7 and Windows Vista web-connected gadgets, Windows 7 backgrounds and borders, and operating system audio elements. So you get the whole shooting match. So you know, you can play the corporate theme when you log on in the morning. That's the startup sound. Oh, my goodness. Or the advertiser sound, heaven forbid.
Yes.
Anyway, we'll watch this space and we'll see what happens. I don't know.
Not quite sure these are winning strategies.
I think they're selling out a little bit there. This last ditch stand or something like that. Dr. Ron, you've...
Definition of selling out, I think.
You've got the first virus released on the Apple iPhone. Have you had the privilege of being Rickrolled, my friend?
I don't personally have the virus. However,
the person sitting next to you has meets all the criteria, except he doesn't have a data plan on that carrier. So he didn't experience said Rick Astley. Now,
have you got it, JD? Did you get it on your iPhone?
And I very quickly changed the root password on the phone.
I was going to say I was very disappointed if you had got it. I would have known that you would have changed the root password.
How do you change the root password on a phone? Obviously, you can't if it hasn't been jailbroken.
Well, in the iPhone, there's a couple of issues. Firstly, you're only vulnerable if you've hacked your iPhone and you've opened the SSH application. So
that's the secured shell.
Secure shell. So that allows other people, including yourself, to log into the phone in a separate session, if you like. So if you haven't done that, if you haven't enabled SSH, then you're not at risk.
For those that are not familiar, the secure shell, it's kind of like the for DOS the iPhone. It's the equivalent of command prompt. It's the equivalent of command prompt.
Now I had done that on mine, and so I installed an application called Terminal, which allows me to type in command line commands into my iPhone. And so you type in PASSWD, which is change password, and it asks you for your current password. You tell it, you give it a new one, and you're done.
Excellent. But most people who, obviously people who haven't got their phone jailbroken don't need to worry about this sort of stuff, but those that like to tinker, it could be a problem, especially if you're connected to Optus.
Yeah, the danger is if you've been adventurous enough to tinker, but you're not quite tech savvy enough to know how to change the root password, they're the people that are going to be most vulnerable.
Except you can turn off SSH. So the other thing to do, which I've done on my wife's phone and my phone, is I've actually turned off the SSH server. So it's not running until I actually want it to be running, and then I know I'm insecure if I've not changed my password.
And if you are worried about it, if you have jailbroken your iPhone and you're not sure what to do, there's plenty of information on the web. You can Google to find out how to lock it all down.
I had a client call me today and said, do you write applications for iPhones? I said, not in your life.
Not after this week.
And less and less people are, yeah.
Warlock has told us what the password is in the chat room. And the password is Alpine. I think I omitted that from the news. I was fully intending to let everybody know what it is because...
Which password is that one?
That's the default root password on the iPhone and a lot of other Apple devices, I understand.
Yep. No, just the iPhone.
No, just the iPhone? Mm. Okay.
Okay. So everyone needs to know that that password is not secure. It's out there. We've just set it on air here. It's in chat rooms. It's on forums. It's publicly available. If you haven't changed your root password, if you're tinkering with this sort of stuff, then your device is not secure. Mm. And while... this virus or worm, I think it technically is not destructive. It doesn't actually take contact information or harvest any personal information from your device. It just goes to show how simple it is to do and for a device to be infected.
Well, actually, I think I'm sure I read somewhere that the original virus that was written as a sort of a proof that it could be done. Yeah, all it does is change the phone's wallpaper, so you get a Rick Astley thing. It's a phenomenon known as Rick Rolling. If you Google that, you'll find out all about it. But I believe something has been spotted. I'm not sure how prevalent it is in the wild, a variant of it that does at least have the potential to upload your data to a website. So it's probably, just because the one that's out and about and most common is not too destructive doesn't mean that it's not potentially dangerous and a variant could be much more destructive or invasive.
So the lesson is, Andrew, if you've got an iPhone, if it's been jailbroken, if you've installed a program called SSH or Secure Shell and you haven't changed the default password, you need to change the default password because we all know it's Alpine at the moment.
Mm.
And so do the authors of these sorts of programs.
I think it's pretty impressive that a young... was he a teenage kid? Was he a bit older? Was he in his 20s? I don't recall his age.
This one was 21... of this virus is 21 years old. Yep.
Yeah, living in Wollongong, which is a, you know, a sort of a southern Sydney outpost, for want of a better term. Sorry, we don't go to... Oh, do we? Oh, sorry, Sydney side. But interesting part of the world to obviously write a little... which has gone worldwide, by the way. Everyone's talking about it. Lyd was talking about it in Silicon Valley. Oh, some Australian kid's done this first thing for the iPhone. Mm. Anyway, he's out there. Well done. He's made a name for himself now. I think he's been... there's job offers coming in left, right and centre for him at the moment too, as well as death threats and his mum, he got into trouble with his mum and dad.
I bet he did. What are all these cameras doing out the front of our
house?
What
have you done? I think they went and Googled it and they read up on it and found him in the front page of the Sydney Morning Herald or something like that, which would have been quite...
it's a bit unfortunate that the way he's gone about it is to actually release a virus into the wild, but at least he's looking at the security and thinking creatively about things and bringing these vulnerabilities to light. I think that's the good side of it.
And you've got to look at the good side, Graham. You're absolutely right, because he actually did the right thing. He's made people aware of...
yeah.
A flaw in the device.
So I don't know whether he reported it to Apple before he actually released the proof of concept code, which would have been the right thing to do. But yes,
it wouldn't have mattered because it only affected jailbroken phones,
and Apple wouldn't have cared about it. Oh, there you go.
I probably would have promoted it.
Right. All right, Dr. Ron, Telstra and Optus are getting serious about SMS scams. Now, you mentioned this in the news.
Allegedly, they're getting serious.
We didn't use the word allegedly in this, do we?
I didn't in the news, but
now this. This interests me. Go on.
I knew it would interest you, Graham.
Any particular reason, Graham?
Yes.
I put this in especially because of the discussion you had last week.
Yeah,
Graham,
GD copped the same thing. He's one of our moderators on the chat, and he copped exactly the same thing on his device too.
What they've said is the ACCC gave the carriers a bit of a rev earlier on this year, back in March, and said, "Come on, look, if there's misleading advertising or if there's unfair contracts or inadequate disclosure or subscription scams, we're going to be targeting those." What both Telstra and Optus have said just this last week is that they're going to contract the company WMC Global, who are going to do in-market monitoring. So what that means is they are going to pretend that they're subscribers. They're going to subscribe to these schemes that are advertised on television. They're going to sign up for premium SMS services. They're going to test them out. They're going to ensure that they're operating in accordance with individual codes of conduct that the carriers have adopted.
That they charge what they say they're going to
charge. They're going
to
charge.
And that it is possible to unsubscribe when you want to.
Exactly,
yep.
Graham. And if not, or if so, whatever the results of the tests are, they're going to report back directly, independently to Telstra and Optus and say, hey, these guys are towing the line, they're fine. Hey, this guy that sent a message to Graham and you've just started charging him, no, you've really screwed up there and you're leaving yourselves open for criticism by the ACCC.
Now, that's very encouraging, and it's certainly a step in the right direction. Interesting you say this happened in March, because I've noticed a huge difference. I've had trouble on my last two phone bills. Now, since last time I spoke about this on Tech Talk Radio...
Yep, last week.
Yep. I've had another discussion with Telstra.
Okay, in the space of a week. Okay, what happened?
In the space of a week, yeah, because last week I was really angry because there were more of these charges on my bill, and, yeah, there were still problems going on. Now, when I initially reported, this is now the bill before the current bill, a month ago, they were very sceptical. They said, oh, well, you must have gone there. You must have subscribed. We don't believe you when you say you didn't subscribe, and you will pay these things. And then when I yelled at them for about half an hour, they offered to pay half and make me pay the other half of money that basically was, nothing,
You shouldn't have to pay anything.
Money they'd demanded off me for services that were never supplied.
Yep.
So, I was very angry with them at that point. And after last week's show, I was angry because I'd got another bill and I'd got more of these charges on it. Now, after last week's show, I rang Telstra, and the response I got was, "Yes, we know about this scam."
So they've admitted it's a scam now.
We know it's a problem. We have a specialist team that deals with these problems. We're sorry that you've been involved. We'll put a credit on your bill for all of these charges, no arguments. And it was a much, much, much better experience, and they were much more responsive and aware of what was going on.
Oh, good. Well done, Telstra. So Telstra listening to the community.
Well done, Telstra.
They are learning, yeah.
Good.
Now, why they hadn't picked that up the month ago, I don't know.
Maybe it's just new. Maybe it just needed a few hundred thousand more complaints to come in before they realised.
Well, it must have needed quite a lot of complaints, because even when I first put my complaint in, I did a search on Whirlpool and found literally dozens of people in a thread there who are having exactly the same problem. And if there's dozens on Whirlpool, there's thousands in the community.
We've had listeners call in here and speak on our chat about it as well. And not to mention, there's probably people who don't communicate with radio programs listening out there going, hey, I got that on my very phone.
There must be thousands of them, yes. If a small sample like, Tech Talk Radio listeners or Whirlpool users have got more than one example, then in the wider community, there must be thousands or tens of thousands of people affected.
And as I think Adam said, as what was it, last week or the week before, all you need is 1 cent from every subscriber or a dollar from every subscriber on an account, and it just amounts to millions and millions of dollars every month.
Absolutely. So, well done, Telstra, for learning and getting better on their customer service, and I'm looking forward to getting my new bill with everything credited back.
Are you going
to
get a some sort of pain and anguish credit as well? So, sorry for mucking you around. You're a valued customer. You have $100 or
Dr.
have
Ron.
A month's free service.
Dr. Ron, in your dreams.
You're a funny guy, Dr. Ron.
I'm serious. Can you run for Prime Minister? There's a variety show host going on Channel 10 at the moment. Why don't you ever go there?
If I was in charge of their team, like that was investigating this sort of stuff, I would be recommending that happen in the strongest possible terms, because they just really need to look at this from the customer service point of view. Someone like yourself, Graham, has gone through so much frustration and anguish, and you know what's happening. You've identified from a technical aspect what's going on. There are people.
I have spent hours on the phone dealing with this problem.
Of course you have.
Hours that I could have spent charging my customers for my time.
Of course you have. And you've also, how much time has Telstra wasted taking calls from you? If they just put
the basic
safeguards in place in the first instance, none of it would have happened.
Exactly.
There you go.
Finished?
Yep, slash rant.
Yes. Slash rant.
Okay.
All right, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio. Back with more after this.
You're listening to Australia's most informative technology show.
Tech Talk Radio.
Cast your mind back to the 90s.
This is a tad awkward, but not quite as bad as Dr. Ron's choice of music.
Anyway, went in there and that...
Before we got distracted beautifully by that, I was going to talk about...
Somebody rings me every day at the moment to want to change my light globes.
Yep, that's it. It was a challenge and an opportunity, wasn't it?
I don't know. good. Glad you cleared the air on that one.
Yeah, it's out there.
Yeah, it is. As Mulder would say.
You're listening to Australia's most informative technology show.
Tech Talk Radio.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio, proudly sponsored by D-Link, building networks for people.
And welcome back to Tech Talk Radio.
Andrew's now the proud owner of a new domain name.
Yes, thank you. Who was that? Was that TARDIS? That's a good domain name. I've got it now. Thanks, TARDIS. That's good. /rant.com.au, well, coming to a blog near you.
We're all having a race in the studio here to see who can register the fastest.
Andrew won.
That's very funny. What a sensational waste of money and abuse of technology.
Absolutely. It's only a couple of bucks. Who cares? Who cares? Anyway.
What else is happening? What else is going on? We've got to say hello to Levi in the chat room.
This is going off in the chat tonight, isn't it?
I happen to know that Levi is a young man in the United States, and he emailed me about a week or a couple of weeks ago. Yep. And he said, look, I live in this eastern seaboard zone of time zone in the US. What time do I have to get up to listen to Tech Talk? And we did the maths.
The answer is early.
Yeah, it was about 4 a.m. or something. Yep. And I said, I think it was 4 a.m. to 6 a.m. your time on a Monday. You'll
he's
hear
gone.
Us.
Where'd he go?
No, he's still there. He's still firing off messages. And
I'm on the wrong chat.
And he's in there. He's got up at 4 a.m. to listen to us live. Isn't that crazy? We've also got Dan, who is in New Zealand at the moment, listening live. He's got people everywhere.
And if you're listening to us and we were, you haven't got any news coming up. Apparently, there's a storm in Sydney. So your Sydney news is no longer. You stick with us.
Stick with us. Yeah, you'll go places.
That's the best way anyway.
Absolutely. It's only the same old on there. You hear about Kevin Rudd and a few other people.
Yeah, that's it.
We had our news earlier anyway. Much more informative, thanks to Dr. Ron.
Chat.techtalkradio.com.au is where we are at the moment. You can talk to us there live, or you can go to Ustream to look at us.
You can see Dr. Ron's brand new soup strainer.
Your what? Oh, yes. Sorry. I had to catch up there.
There we are. Yes, don't just be very careful. It's not moderated, that webcam.
Oh.
There
we are.
We've got the Manic Minute. Who came up with...
The Mad Minute.
We called it Manic. The Manic Minute. Incorrectly, because I thought that was really quite a good train. We registered that one. The Manic Minute.
I said that's where you go, where you run through all of the items.
The bits
on
that
our,
we don't get on the
list. Right at the very end before we get into the final five.
From about item five through to the end.
Yeah, that's exactly.
We run through very, very fast.
Someone on the chat. Was that you last week on the chat that called it that, or Andrew's doing the Manic Minute?
I think so, yeah. Andrew's coming. Yeah, that's it.
That'll be coming up later on the show, all the pieces of paper that we don't get to read out and talk about as we go through. One that I do want to talk about, a court ruling sees Apple's massacre of PiStar sort of kick into full swing. Rumour has it that the clone maker will be out of business in the not-too-distant future.
Oh, no more Hackintoshes.
Hackintosh, yeah, that's good. A year and a half after hitting the headlines for angering Apple by selling OS X software on a non-Apple hardware, it appears that the game may be now over for PiStar, as they've lost the key initial stages of their legal battle to survive. Now, I think Apple have part of the terms and conditions that the OS X software can only be installed on an Apple device, which means that...
On a device that has an Apple logo on it, yes.
Oh, I can put an Apple logo on it for you.
You can. And they
but you can't put an Apple logo on it without permission.
And they used to distribute stickers.
Oh, you can. You go to Woolies and
get
theirs.
What about a Woolworths logo?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
And they used to distribute stickers with the OS boxes, so you just put a sticker on. what,
that's enterprising, isn't apparently it? Entrepreneuring too.
Apparently, what they actually got done for, there's a couple of issues. They, like most manufacturers would, they made their own standard operating environment and then installed it into the computers rather than doing a fresh install. And so apparently they were done on developing a alternate version of the operating system without permission and then distributing it. And the other issue is that they would install OS 10.6, for example, on a machine, but ship the wrong disk with it. So clearly it wasn't the original disk that was installed on that computer. So there's a range of issues that PiStar's quality control should have seen fit to fix, but didn't.
You don't have any impurities in the Apple Orchard at your house, do you?
No, but I've tried a few times.
Have you seen one? Played one? With one?
Let me think. I probably have at some point.
You have.
I'm sure you have.
Yeah.
I just can't remember.
Really? Well, then I won't ask you the next question. Was were they any good?
generally, there's a couple that are. I mean, I certainly, before I bought the MacBook that I'm using in the studio at the moment, I was certainly looking at using a EPC-like machine like Dr. Ron's and hacking it to run the Mac operating system. And the Dell Mini 9 does it very well, apparently.
Oh, okay.
Because it's got the same hardware as the MacBooks do, so all the drivers work. But in a lot of cases, there's swapped components, so it's a slightly different video card or a slightly different audio card, so something doesn't work in most of them. But there's a bit of a compatibility chart out there. So not that I've researched it at all, but if you have a look online, you'll find a lot of compatibility charts about what will work and won't work as a Hackintosh.
Well, chances are you won't be able to get one anyway very shortly, by the way.
You will. Apple aren't particularly interested in people that are tinkering. They are interested in corporations that are trying to make money out of their operating system and their...
Leveraging off their name.
Correct.
That's what they do. What any company would do, I guess, in a lot of respects.
But the big issue, though, apparently for Apple, is there's someone sponsoring PiStar in the courts, and they're trying to find out who it is that's financing the court arrangements.
Oh.
Because they reckon that they're actually the company that they should be going for.
Oh, someone's paying for it. Mm. Oh, okay. Interesting.
Well, like in our chat room, says it's pronounced PiStar. It's PSY.
I wondered about that.
Yeah, that's all right. We know what we're talking about.
Won't matter shortly. So.
It could be called the Death Star very shortly.
Enough, there's a feature in their logo that does look a little bit like a bit of apple peel. Go Woolworths.
Yeah, go Woolworths. Yeah.
Maybe Woolies is next, because they're in their sights.
Mm. We're making thinly veiled, well, not even really thinly veiled, Woolworths references, because Apple was kicking up a stink a few weeks ago about a new logo that Woolworths had adopted, and they said...
Yeah, the apple peel on the side of the truck.
Yeah, they said they were going to take legal action against them for breaching trademark.
W looked a bit like the Apple logo.
Yeah, come on, Apple, come on.
No, I don't think it's gone anywhere yet. I think it's all still in limbo.
It is still before the courts, waiting for a court date.
Smoke and mirrors.
Yes.
Smoke and mirrors.
As soon as there's a result, though, we'll be sure to let you know what it is.
Now, Levi, who has disappeared... Where did you say he was in the United States?
I think somewhere... East Coast.
Okay. Mm. Then this is no relevance to him, but apparently in Ohio. Ohio?
Ohio.
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 Hello, everyone listening to us in Ohio this evening. Apparently their Wi-Fi was turned off not so long ago because someone was doing putting up illegal movies for download, so they just turned the whole city's Wi-Fi network off to stop them downloading
all of it. Oh, okay, so it's like a city-sponsored Wi-Fi network in town.
Well, internet surfers in a small Ohio city had their municipal Wi-Fi switched off after Sony Pictures complained about it being used for just one illegal movie download. This one.
Oh.
Residents of Coshocton in the northern U.S. state had been using the free Civic wireless network for 5 years without a problem, until a letter arrived to the ISP's managing service, in it, the Motion Picture Association of America claimed that it had traced an illegal peer-to-peer download of a Sony film to the single IP address of all users that the network shared. So that was it. Turn it off.
This is a big red warning flag that every internet user needs to pay attention to, because it sounds like a funny story, but this is the sort of behaviour that we are all going to be signed up for if these new copyright treaties that we were talking about last week...
Well, didn't Adam have some news for that?
...end up going into effect. So, yeah, just watch out. The fact that a movie company has the power without any evidence, proof, court, you know, review process to shut down a service like that, just watch out. This is the future.
Yes, it's well worth listening. Did you hear Dr. Ron last week?
Yeah, I did. It's scary stuff.
For people in WeWa who probably didn't hear the show last week because it's only going to air for the first time this week, go and download the podcast because it was very interesting listening, especially if you have an interest in that sort of topic, because it is. It's... Very shortly, ISPs are going to become judge and jury, really, based on what the big boys with the big stick up the other end of town say.
It's all going to be done in the, you know, by agreement in and by regulation without any review, any legal process. They don't have to take you to court and prove that you're guilty of downloading a movie. They can just accuse you of it and impose the penalty. And the other problem with it is that they're going after the wrong person. They're going after the ISP who's carrying the traffic rather than the end user who's done the wrong thing. And that is completely unacceptable. It's like trying to blame Telstra for someone who's made a malicious phone call. It's just fundamentally wrong and has got to be stopped.
Yeah, it's as Adam was sort of saying last week, you know, it's just going to steamroll. And, of course, if someone just downloads something, then that's it.
And if ordinary internet users out there don't kick up a really big stink about this, it will just happen and no one will have any say in the process, because it will all be done by negotiated treaties that you'll never, ever hear about.
And suddenly we'll wake up and all this will just be happening.
Yep.
Just happen overnight.
And yeah, Australian internet companies will be controlled by overseas legal companies that are being paid by the film industry.
Yes, watch out. And you'll be finding that all the 50 gig plans, download limits will all disappear on the ISPs because no one will need them anymore. So,
And along with all your other freedom of use of the internet.
Correct. All right, now speaking of Adam, he had an interesting scenario during the course of the week where he had to program someone's mobile phone for mail, which led us on to tonight's discussion about POP and IMAP. POP 3
being
the old post office protocol.
Yep, yep.
Version 3 or incarnation 3, and IMAP.
IMAP 4.
Which is two ways to check your mail. But which one works best for you? We'll talk about that after this week's View from the Couch.
Friends don't let friends use POP 3. Quickly helping a friend set up email on his phone turned into a 3-hour saga recently as we migrated his business from POP 3 to IMAP. Now, my friend Marvin, that's not his real name, I'm trying to protect his identity, runs his own international business with around half a dozen employees. For about 6 years, the company website and email have been hosted in Australia, and Marvin's been very happy with the service. Then he went and bought out an iPhone, and that's where the trouble started. Marvin came around for dinner recently and asked me if I could help him set up his work email on his new love, an iPhone 3GS. No problem, I said, knowing it only takes a few minutes to set up email on an iPhone. Marvin was already accessing his email via Entourage on his MacBook Pro, so I asked him if he was using IMAP or POP 3. He looked at me blankly as if I was speaking another language. For a moment, I found it hard to believe that a man who's aiming for $1 million turnover next year wouldn't know if his own email client was running IMAP or POP 3. Then I had to remind myself that he's a human resources consultant. He understands people, not computers. He doesn't care whether his email client uses IMAP or POP 3. He just wants it to work so he can get on with running his business. To be honest, that's how most business people approach computers, the same way I approach cars. I don't know how it works. I just want it to get me from A to B. So, we logged into Marvin's webmail account and discovered a whole heap of folders on the server, so I assumed he was running IMAP. Now, in a nutshell, IMAP is designed to keep your email in sync between multiple devices. This means you can read a new email using your desktop client like Outlook or a smartphone like your iPhone or webmail through Firefox or Internet Explorer, and you know that your email will be automatically marked as read on each device. It also means that you can create folders on the server. If you're using POP 3, then your devices can't stay in sync. Worse yet, if you're using POP 3 and not leaving a copy of each email on the server, then once you check your email via your smartphone, those new emails won't show up on your desktop. In short, if you're using more than one device to check your email, then it's a very good idea to use IMAP instead of POP 3. Like I said, Marvin's webmail account was full of folders on the server, so I assumed he was already using IMAP. Then I looked a little closer and discovered that those folders didn't correspond with his current inbox or sent messages. Looking over my shoulder, Marvin realised that these folders on the server contained lost emails he hadn't seen for years, some dated from 2003, others dated 2006. Checking Entourage revealed that he was currently using POP 3 to check his email. So where did all these folders on the server come from? It was very confusing. After chatting to Marvin further, I discovered that he started out accessing his email from Windows using Outlook. Later, he switched to Thunderbird before switching to a Mac and using Entourage. What I could see on the server was a set of IMAP folders created by Outlook in 2003 and another set of IMAP folders created by Thunderbird in 2006. He lost access to emails in these folders every time he changed email clients and created a new set of folders. Now, I've managed to switch email clients on my computers in the past without this problem, but only because I'm tech-savvy enough to know the difference between POP3 and IMAP. Now, while Marvin has been happy with his web hosting and email service, the online instructions for setting up your email aren't great. The online documentation doesn't mention IMAP, instructing you to set up everything as POP3. Now, I could have set Marvin up with POP3 access to his email on his iPhone and left it like that, but it would have been a mess. It would have been the equivalent
of popping the bonnet on his car to check the oil and ignoring the leaking radiator and the worn fan belt. I was ready to switch Marvin's entire business over to Fastmail, my email provider of choice, until I discovered his provider actually supports IMAP. They just don't mention it in the setup instructions. Now, considering that the online instructions only refer to POP3, I still don't know how Marvin managed to initially set up Outlook and Thunderbird using IMAP. Maybe they've changed their online documentation since then. Maybe it was just a fluke. What I ended up doing was creating a new account profile in Entourage using IMAP, which created yet another set of IMAP folders on the server. Then I dragged Marvin's current email into the IMAP inbox in Entourage, which also then synced with the server. Now he could send and receive email from Entourage or his iPhone and have everything stay in sync. He was very impressed, not having previously realized that such things were possible. Next, we took all the emails from the long-lost server folders and copied them all into his new inbox so he can sort them out later. The final step was to redirect the five other work email accounts he was checking from Entourage using POP3. Now the main account checks these other accounts automatically on the server via IMAP, so he can access them all from the one main email account. Again, he hadn't realized such things were possible. The important thing for Marvin now is that, as far as he's concerned, his email still works the same way it did before. My aim was to ensure that I didn't force him to reorganize his business to suit his email system. The only change now is that he needs to make sure he doesn't leave too many emails on the server, as his inbox will eventually reach his limit. Thankfully, Marvin is a deleter rather than a hoarder, so this shouldn't be too much of a problem. Marvin's email setup was a ticking time bomb just waiting to wreak havoc on his business. Once I realized the mess it was in, I couldn't in good conscience leave it the way it was. Friends don't let friends use POP3.
Entertaining, informative and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Yeah, so now you know the difference, don't you? No, you don't? Oh, well. Graeme, you set this up all the time for all your customers.
Absolutely, yes. I'm familiar with those sorts of problems.
What do you do if it's a single
You have to take into account the each customer's needs. Some people are happy just to have one client where all their email arrives, and other people need a bit more.
So where would you use IMAP classically? Well, would you mix them? Would you match them? Or how would you do it?
Well, I'd never mix them. IMAP you would tend to use where you have multiple folders that you need to access from multiple devices, and you can keep the folders on the server. Now, that's not always practical. Sometimes the ISP doesn't allow to leave your mail on the server, or doesn't provide you with enough space to do it. Where you can, that's often the best way to go, because it means you can have the same folders you have on your iPhone, also appear on your desktop. You're out and about, you can go back and find that stuff that you moved into the Andrew folder.
Yeah, and if you're in a corporate network, as I am at work, then you can jump onto somebody else's computer, log in as you, and you still get your email there.
Yeah, and frequently it also means that you can access those same folders via the webmail as well, if you've got webmail attached to the account. So
if you're an average person these days who's bought their new smartphone and they want to check their mail whilst on the go, as well as at home on the PC, IMAP's the way to go.
Yes, and if your ISP doesn't support IMAP...
Find one that does?
Not necessarily. The dead easy solution is to set yourself up with a Gmail account, forward all your mail from your ISP to the Gmail account, configure Gmail so that it knows what your real email address is at your ISP.
Yeah, you can do that, can't you?
Yeah. And away you go. You've got a massive, very reliable webmail system in Gmail that you can also access using IMAP for your desktop and your portable devices. It's a fantastic way to go.
I use Post Office Protocol, the POP protocol, a lot, using my Telstra Big Pond account. And it's a matter, in my case, it's a matter of just knowing how I'm going to operate the account. So I have it set up on my workstation at home that it checks my email every 15 minutes or so, but it leaves it on the server for 7 days.
Yeah, I do that too.
And yep. Then on my phone or anything else, I know I can read it, and I leave it to leave it on the server indefinitely. And so my home account deletes it after 7 days.
Does
my phone does what I want
it
to.
Yeah, so unless one of your devices goes for more than 7 days without checking your mail, both devices see all your emails. Now, that's a great process in theory, but it has a tendency to end up falling apart at some point or other. Your ISP, I'm sorry, JD, your ISP will change servers, or you'll change clients, and you'll end up with 7 days of repeated
emails.
I'm
still using Eudora from 1984, so...
Eudora's no longer supported, JD.
It works.
Yeah, fair enough.
So with IMAP, if you delete on a portable device, does that mean it'll be on the home machine or the office machine, or will it automatically delete right across, as in delete at the server so you can't see it anymore?
Depends on the behaviour of your device. There's two modes of deleting in IMAP. You can sort of flag something for deletion and it'll still sit there for a while until you actually purge it. But yes, in theory, if you delete something from one device, it'll delete it from the server, and that will get updated onto your other clients. So it really does keep everything in line between all your different machines.
It's very cool to watch. You can delete it on an item on your mobile phone, for example, and if you're logged in to a couple of machines in the same room, they've all got mail clients running, you'll just see the message disappear. It's all, everything's synchronised. But ARD in our chat room's asking what's wrong with POP3. There's nothing wrong with it. It's just horses for courses. It depends whatever you're comfortable using.
Yeah, it just doesn't have these extra features. POP3 is a great way just to retrieve your messages, to get them off the server and to get them under your control. If you've only got one machine that's checking your email, or you're using POP3 to transfer messages from one system to another, like you might use POP3 on Google to retrieve your messages from your ISP and then use the IMAP server on Gmail. So if you're doing something like that that's nice and simple, then POP3 is a great way to go. POP3 is like operating a post office box. So your ISP comes and puts all your mail in the mailbox, and then you come and you go to the mailbox and you take it out, and it's not in the box anymore.
Okay. Whereas IMAP's a bit like having your wife go and check the mail, and she opens it up and checks it and then puts it back in the envelopes and gives it back to you, right?
Well, not only that, it's like having a whole office there. Your mail gets delivered to your desk, you put it in folders, you organise it everywhere, and then you can access that desk from anywhere. So
there is a good thing I can think of with POP3, which does have an advantage over IMAP, and that is disk space considerations on the server.
Absolutely.
If you download your mail and you don't leave a copy there using the POP3 method, then you're keeping the server clean, and you're not going to have anything left on the server from a disk space point of view.
And that's often why ISPs don't offer IMAP, is because they don't want their customers storing all their 18 years of email history on the server.
That's right. And the other effect which you notice using IMAP is that it will start to fill up. It'll start to fill up with mail, and you'll start...
But it does with any protocol, doesn't it?
No, with POP3, if you don't leave the messages on the server, everything is removed. Every time you log on and check your mail, everything's downloaded. And it's like a clean slate. There's nothing left on the server. As Graeme said, you've taken everything out of your PO box.
And your PO box is then empty, ready for the next batch of mail. Whereas if you're using IMAP, it continues to build up there.
And you'll have common email programs like Thunderbird will give you a little progress bar down the bottom. It'll say, your account's 70%. 80% full, 90% full.
You get an email from your ISP saying that too.
The trick is to move emails out of your inbox and into other folders if you're using the IMAP type system, so that you keep your inbox small, so the performance of checking for new mail is much better.
That's one of the things I like about Gmail, because they offer that feature, and you can actually create what they call a label, which is in your terms a folder, and you move everything across into that so that you can, you know, sort the social from the business or the...
The Gmail system is a fantastic system, because you can also you create so-called folders that are based on searches. So you can, even if you haven't moved things into folders, you can do a search for Andrew McComb, and any email that mentions Andrew will go into that folder.
Yeah, I've got to send a cheerio to my wife at this stage. He just texted me. So there you go. See, there's a way you can beat email. You can just send
SMS
text. And absolutely.
Didn't we do a calculation on the cost of SMS?
Yeah, we did, actually. And, of course, the girls will be listening at home. Go to bed. School day tomorrow. Okay. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. I'm Andrew McComb. Dr. Ron is in. The late Dr. Ron, if you're reading our chat. And speaking of late, Adam Turner's just joined the chat, I noticed, there in the bottom of my screen as I scroll down.
Whatever television program he watches on a Monday night, he always seems to log on around about a bit after 9 p.m., so welcome, Adam.
And if you're listening to us in Wee Waa, want to know who Adam Turner is, he writes things for magazines and newspapers and things like that, and graces us.
You just heard him from his couch.
You did. He sits on the couch and spiels all sorts of interesting things. So if you want to have a chat to him.
He's a resident IT journalist.
Yeah, if you get the Sydney Morning Herald and all that and you read online, he's there now. Come and have a chat to him. chat.techtalkradio.com.au. All right. So there you go. Do we know everything about Pop3 and IMAP then for the time being? Have we answered the question if someone's at home and they want an IMAP or a Pop account and they've got a mobile phone and an email account, what should they use? IMAP. Is that what you're saying, Graham?
Often IMAP if they can. Depends on the individual situation. If you're not too sure and we've confused you, get yourself onto the forum and create a topic there.
Let's have a chat.
Tell us all about what your situation is, what you want to do with your mail, and what options you've got.
What you're trying to achieve.
Good idea. That's a good use of the forum.
And someone will come there and say, well, if you do it this way, you can have these features, and we'll try and point you in the right direction.
Fantastic. The Manic Minute coming up shortly.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio, proudly sponsored by D-Link, building networks for people.
Now, let's talk about Freeview.
Hey, someone just joined the wave.
They're the people I want to avoid the calls from.
Comes in very handy, especially when your files get really, really big and corruption takes place.
So you're an AAAAAA.
Dude, it's not even a beta. It's just for us to play around with.
They also cited taxes and freight costs.
Just mount it on your desktop and run it direct.
It's a big risk.
Oh, you watch the webcam.
Yeah.
You're listening to Australia's most informative technology show, Tech Talk Radio.
Greetings, everyone. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio, Australia's loveliest technology radio show.
And that was Elmer Fudd.
Thanks, Elmer.
AKA one of our listeners in the chat. And the chat's gone off tonight. They're all sitting there comparing iPhone applications at the moment, which is very cute. I must admit, I got mine the other day, Bump. Have you bumped lately?
I haven't
we
bumped,
spoke about no. Bump. It's you've got to actually physically come into contact with someone with another iPhone, and then it handles over your connection, your business card thingy. It's quite fun, especially with the other opposite sex. Anyway, there you go. What should we talk about now, Dr. Rowan? You're on the rundown, says he.
I've got Coro.
Yeah, actually, I've got Coro too. Have you? Sorry, we never got to Coro. We've been awfully distracted tonight.
No,
A, you're late. B, we've got the Wee Warians are in town tonight.
I know. There's a lot happening. It's an hour and a half into the program, so let's do
what we're supposed
to do in the first 10 minutes. Yes. From Mark Diggins, former Tech Talk radio
panelist.
What do you
mean, former? He's coming over for the Christmas party.
Is he? Oh, good, good, good.
Are you coming?
Yeah, if I get an invite. No, I'll be there. And it'll be good. We need to try and get Mark back in here, at least for one show. Can we do that? Is that possible?
We try. We'll have to come back after our break to do it, though.
Well, yeah, we'll look at the dates. Well, I could get him in here one night, maybe. I don't know. We'll see how we go.
Maybe we'll do a surprise Christmas show.
Look, Mark says, I think you've talked about this before, but I may be able to give it a try between Boston and LAX when heading back to Oz.
Oh, I was talking to him offline about this, yeah.
Until January the 15th, 2010, Google is providing free Wi-Fi on all Virgin America flights.
Yeah, except at the one airport that you need it at, which is Los Angeles. It's not at LAX.
It isn't?
No.
Oh. Mark says, that's the best such offer we've seen for in-flight internet service this year. Click here for a complete... Oh, I may have copied and pasted that. That's meaningless on radio. Don't click anything on this radio program. yeah, so
you'll get someone else's podcast.
That's right.
You'll move up to the next one on your
from
iTunes.
Mark. Yeah, Dave says, hi, guys. I like your show. Thanks, Dave. I'm a little concerned by the lack of focus about consumer-level electronics. I see a growing trend on your show toward covering topics that you use in your day jobs, which are of a professional basis. He's a bit concerned about the view from the couch by Adam and our discussion about e-ink. He says, none of you could name e-ink, the technology behind the Kindle, even though the product is well-known internationally and has received a lot of press in Australia.
Oh.
Well, we read out all the goods and the bads, so send them through.
Yeah, just call Dr. John Fain over there.
That's right. So
he's a commentator in Melbourne Radio.
He is. If you've got any comments or criticisms, then send them through. Feedback at techtalkradio.com.au. I sent Dave a reply.
Yeah, I think I did too.
He's going to try and listen more regularly. And he says, on a side note, he thinks iPhone beats Android due to lack of consistency across Android devices.
Mm, yes. Interesting.
And a quick one from Matthew, our Tech Talk Radio European correspondent. Matthew Robinson says, last night at midnight, Sunday the 1st of November, they filmed the switch off of analog television in Denmark, which is where Matthew lives.
They filmed it.
It was cool because there was an old television at the wedding, he says. They then had a camera in a server. This really sounds like a Matthew. It just meanders from thing to thing. They then had a camera in the server room on the guy who pulled the plug. It was very dramatic. Then snow. No more analog in Denmark. So it's happened.
Yeah, well, it's about to happen here in South Australia, Mount Gambier, those sort of areas.
They're if you're listening to us then, off.
The end of this year, if it's not about to, it's very, very soon, before Christmas, less than a month ago. By the way, ABC3 is December 4th. Last week we were saying, where's ABC3? Well, December the 4th.
ABC channel specifically targeted at young people.
Yeah, the
little small people.
The 5 to 12 year old demographic is what it targets, which will be very good for some households, won't it, JD?
And I heard
fantastic.
On...
and it's a fantastic birthday present for my little fella.
I heard on ABC Radio too that apparently they've turned up their digital broadcasting to full power now.
Yeah.
After
for all two people.
After some months of testing.
Does that mean the programs are as the same volume as the ads?
No ads on the ads. ABC.
They have lots of promos though.
They have promos,
are
yeah.
Are you making reference to 7.2 that seems to broadcast its ads at 200 decibels higher than its program?
How bad is the 9, the alternative 9 channel Go, the 9 digital one? Go channel.
I thought you would like that. It's the Seinfeld channel.
Well, I do like
you're
it.
Talking about audio.
Seinfeld is never enough.
Correct. I'm quite enjoying the programming. I'm talking about the audio. It's atrocious.
If you're listening to us in a rural area, I think that's channel 88.
Okay.
Channel we have it as channel 99 in town, and I think it's channel 88 in the countryside. Okay.
I know that you've said time and time again, Andrew, from the point of view of how it all works with limiting and that sort of technology, where it's supposed to be that it's around about the same level. There is a absolute discernible difference in the program volume, and then the ads come on, bang, you've got to turn your volume down 2 or 3 notches on the TV. Program comes back on, can't hear it, got to turn it up again. It's really noticeable on that 9 Go channel.
I have noticed that.
Looks like it was downloaded over the internet 15 years ago.
Yeah, bandwidth.
Pixelated.
That bad.
Yeah.
The other thing I've been meaning to ask for weeks and weeks and weeks, and I keep forgetting, but I haven't forgotten now, and that is, what's happened to all the guide channels?
Who needs a guide channel? You got it online. It's called ICE.
No. I want to just go to a channel with my remote control and see what's coming up next. Well, I can't do that anymore.
Yeah, you can.
Where's
the EPG?
They've all disappeared. Yeah, but they used to have a channel which was dedicated to the program. They just have a slide there with what's coming up next, what's on at 10:30 tonight.
Changed a decade, surely. In the 2010, surely.
They've all disappeared. There's
only Channel 9 that did that, though, wasn't it?
No, they all had them,
but they've all disappeared.
Because they've all turned into second channels.
Yeah, this is what's happened.
Mm. Sorry, JD, you're off mic there for a bit. I found the right fader then
after that. Oh, hello. Welcome back.
I was actually going to talk about, whilst we're doing Coro, this is straight from the iPhone. Andy Bloom sent us an email. Hi, gents. I'd like to suggest an idea for the podcast.
Hi, Andy.
Is there any chance they could be produced to include chapters? Oh, I don't know. Can you put a chapter point in a podcast? Yeah, that's what I thought too.
In an MP3 file, it would be to do with the format of the file that we're using to distribute the podcast.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't like your chances on that one, but I don't know, to be quite honest. Breaking it down into multiple file formats, I think that'd go against the grain for a lot of people.
Yeah.
You got nothing else to do, Graham, with
2 in the morning?
Not doing that. Oh, no, we're not. You get paid way too much money for
You can
what
put chapters in podcasts, says Adam Turner. So
can you?
Yeah.
You can do it in iTunes podcasts. Whether you can do it in plain MP3s, I'm not sure.
Hmm.
Or maybe we'll look into it. There you go. Andy, was saying, say for opening news, intro, featured interviews, Adam Turner. He wants Adam to have his own chapter point. Adam's got his own podcast. You can come along and download and subscribe. But anyway, that's another story. Often he wants to go back later and re-listen to part of a show or for another reason. Or play.
If we're discussing something he doesn't want to hear, he can skip over it, I suppose, to the next topic.
No. It's like skipping the ads, isn't it?
Well.
Anyway, that was a bit of Coro from Andy. Thanks, Andy. And if you want to contribute, feedback@techtalkradio.com.au is the email address. But come into the chat and have a chat with us and all that stuff. See, you learned something. I didn't know you could put a thing in a podcast.
Chapter in a podcast.
So
there you go.
You live and learn every day. Dr. Ron, have you had battery problems lately?
Have I had battery problems? Are you talking about Android
battery
problems?
About item 34 on the rundown that says Nokia battery charger recall.
Oh, look, I haven't had battery problems personally, but Nokia have issued a worldwide recall. 14 million battery chargers, they reckon. Now,
battery chargers, not the battery.
Battery chargers.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah. Now, Australia and New Zealand, I don't think, are affected, and there's a lot of other countries as well that they don't think will be affected. But my advice would be personally is if you've purchased a Nokia phone and you've bought a new battery charger in the last 6 to 12 months, just double check and triple check that there isn't one of those, the numbers that I read
out
in the
news. Oh, you mentioned it in the news, didn't you? Yeah.
The numbers are AC3E, AC3U, manufactured between June and August this year, and AC4U is the model battery charger manufactured between April and October this year. Those particular models of battery chargers were targeted at Europe, but if you have and parts of the United States, but if you have purchased a Nokia phone on eBay, or you've been overseas travelling and you've bought something there and brought it back with you, just double check. Just
what happens? Does it just melt down, does it?
No, Nokia's got concerns that the manufacturer of the charger is faulty and could cause electric shocks. But 14 million is a lot of units to recall. Yeah.
They must be a bit concerned for then if that's the case.
If you want more information about the recall, go to the Nokia website and it's all explained there.
All right, speaking of mobile devices, the smartphone. Well, Windows Mobile falls behind the iPhone and BlackBerry. Microsoft's slice of the worldwide smartphone market slumps into single digits.
Good.
And is... Oh.
No, I said that. Don't look at Graham. Look
oh,
at
was
me.
It you, was
yeah,
it?
Yeah,
sorry,
good.
Sorry,
yeah,
like Graham. Sorry, Graham. I cast
nostalgia. No, I'm totally in agreement. That's the sort of thing I've said.
Both used to use Windows Mobile devices and yeah, neither of us do anymore.
Yeah.
And there's a reason for that, yes.
Where was I before you all said good? and is barely twice the share of the newcomer Android, while the iPhone and BlackBerry are pulling ahead quite nicely.
Good.
Apple has chalked up wins in the local and global smartphone stage, according to reports from tech analyst firm IDC and Gartner. And barely a year after the iPhone debuted on the Australian market, IDC says the touchscreen smartphone had captured 21% of the convergence market by the end of June 2009, buoyed by the launch of the 3GS and price cuts to the entry-level 8GB version. So, is this the beginning of the end for the Windows Mobile?
Windows Mobile.
I wouldn't go that far, no. I would say they're busily trying to come up with the next big thing.
What I would say, though, is there are alternatives for your mobile device when it comes to operating systems. Yeah. Shop around. Have a test and a bit of a look and feel and a try out of the operating system before you commit yourself to a new device. I've used Windows Mobile in the past, and my opinion is that it's not the answer. There are better alternatives.
Well, let's say they've got a lot of work to do to compete with what's out there. So perhaps Microsoft might be listening and take that on board.
Maybe.
The only thing I really enjoyed about my Windows Mobile device was the number of applications you could install on it to make it do what you wanted to do. Unlike the iPhone, where you have to hack it to make it do
some things
outside of the box. Windows Mobile, or at least the version that I used to use on my old XDA2, which is going back a while now, made it do everything I wanted it to do. And I was a bit sad when some of those things weren't available in the iPhone. But I got over it.
No, but that is a good point. And also, it's of course, being a Microsoft device, it's always going to have a slight advantage when it comes to working with things like Exchange Server and Outlook and Microsoft file formats like Word and Excel and all that sort of stuff. So, there's definitely hope there that maybe the some future version of Windows Mobile will be better than the past ones.
Warlock on our chat saying Windows Mobile 6.5 just out and Windows Mobile 7 screenshots are out. Well, I guess it stands for a reason. With Windows 7 coming out, there must be a mobile version thereof. After all, that's what the iPhone is for OS X, isn't it? Pretty much the same operating system. There's another interesting thing came out that I saw. Check out iTunes from your internet browser. This has traditionally been very much the realm of an application on a Mac or a PC. You had to download the device, but now...
And it still is. It's a view-only feature from within iTunes. And
so you've got to be in iTunes to see it in your web browser.
Well,
right?
I think you might be able to link people that are sharing content with you, like in your home or similar, to it. So it doesn't take the place of iTunes at all. You can't download music from it, but you can view the music content that's stored on iTunes through it.
Okay.
So it's a bit of a marketing ploy, I think. Whether they're actually using this as the first part of a push towards a web application, I don't know.
All right, according to this article, it says that if you want to find out if there's a song in the massive Apple catalog, you don't have to fire up the iTunes software. Just follow the links from the Apple homepage. Mm. Or if you're feeling all social and networky, send a link to your friends from within the program itself. Choose the copy link options from the iTunes store.
So, you know, it sounds very much like it's an Apple grab for if you haven't got iTunes, but we'll suck you into iTunes because we'll demonstrate we've got the content you want. or we'll use our network of users, like myself and other people in the room, to send you links to music that they've downloaded that you might like, which will then suck you into iTunes because that's the only way you can download it.
And you can be fairly certain that even if you are looking at the iTunes website in a web browser, it'll be full of links that just pop open iTunes to do those other tasks.
Correct.
Well, if you look at it, their business model is basically well and truly entrenched in iTunes because that's where you do your transaction. You've got to be logged in to your account and do all those sorts of things. So
yes, Adam has a particular...
What's that?
Adam has noted this particular feature that Apple is driving everything to iTunes, yes.
Yeah, no Blu-ray yet though. Anyway, speaking of movies in iTunes... I secured a copy of Adam Sandler's film? The Night at the Museum, number two, the True. Smithsonian, which came out on Blu-ray and selected devices. And like the version of Star Trek that I managed to get, complimentary inside was the other DVD with the low-res portable device copy on it as well. So you punch
what
it
does that mean, a low-res portable device copy?
Well, it means you can just dump straight off your DVD that they provide you and copy
said
movie across onto iPhone or whatever your
portable... So it came with the file this time?
Yeah, it came with the disc this time, so I didn't do a 1.8 gig download this time.
Isn't that crazy?
We talked about that last time.
It basically unlocked it off the disc and put it into iTunes, which I then moved across onto my...
Yeah, so you can only use it on your iPhone. You couldn't use it on another
I can use it on my Windows Media if I choose. To
okay.
It lets you unlock it into many different sort of players because you've obviously bought the copy, so they give you that. And it's a
but they could still have DRM on it.
Oh, of course, so it has.
Yeah, so you couldn't unlock it completely. You couldn't play it on your Linux computer.
At the end of the day, you go and spend bucks and buy yourself go out and buy the DVD. It's just nice to be able to have a save you having to rip it.
Well, it'd be nice on your portable device. But it'd be nice if you could play it on all your devices instead of just being able to play it on your iPhone.
Well, you can. You've got the Blu-ray, which you can play on your Blu-ray player inside, and you've got your...
Which also has controls on it. You can't play that on open systems.
Really? What do you mean? Mm-hmm. What do you mean it's got controls on it?
Well, because you can't have a Blu-ray decoder. You can't decrypt Blu-ray copy-protected discs on say, a Linux computer.
Well, don't get a Linux computer.
Yeah.
That's what I mean? But the bottom line is you can put it into your other machine.
Oh, well, there goes 99% of the world's ISPs. And
But they're not wanting to watch Blu-ray. The Linux is designed for, getting us all connected sort of thing. So, but, I wasn't aware that was a problem. Obviously, Blu-ray doesn't play in any Apple devices.
But still, compared to your
GC, please slap Andrew. Consider myself slapped.
Yes. But considering what you're saying about Star Trek Blu-ray, where you had to then go and download the mobile version of the program.
Yeah, they've got one step better.
So that's much better.
That's one step better. Mm. Yeah.
All right, I'm glad I went there. In a survey that was recently commissioned, did you know that 70% of Aussies, that's Australians for you listening overseas, spend 3 hours in front of a screen at home?
Only three,
yeah. Technology is steadily taking over the lives, with 70% of Aussies admitting that they spend at least 3 hours at home every day in front of some kind of screen, whether that be TV or likewise. Now, I must admit, my kids fall into that category. And if you want to take my work into that category, I spend a lot more than 3 hours of work in front of a screen, and yet we come home and do all that sort of stuff. The average household now has 9 screens, including televisions, computers, PDAs, MP3 players, and mobile phones. Well, if you take all those into consideration, I'm guilty, Your Honour. Got lots of... How many you guys bought, if you want to
take...
Well,
I'm sitting in front of three right here, so...
Yeah. Yeah, so this is a problem.
For nearly half of the homes that include 3 or more TVs, according to the survey of 500 people, most of them sit in front of at least one for 3 hours a day. So, we've got to get out and get some more exercise, I think. And our love affair of technology means that we are defying international trends, because obviously people in other worlds have lives, but we choose to... Well, actually, that's not uncalled for, or that is uncalled for, because a lot of our social networking is all done... stuck to a screen, whether you're on a tram, train, bus, wherever you might happen to be.
I was going to say, the interesting thing would be to do the comparison of the mobile screen versus traditional desktop screen, because I think you find most of it is going to be mobile people, whether it's a laptop and you're taking it with you, or it's actually your mobile phone now, where lots of people are SMSing or they're Twittering, and really what's the difference now? They're messaging via
communicating,
screen, aren't they?
Communicating, aren't they?
How many tellers you got in the house? Straw poll in the studio? Not counting PCs, ones with tuners in them.
Does it include the tuner in the back of the computer?
Let's be generic. How many TV? Like, if you went and turned the telly on and put it onto Channel 99 to hear the loud commercials, How many of those? Two, okay.
I'd have four. Three are operational. It'd be probably one in our bedroom, one in the lounge room, one in the kitchen. And I know there's a one upstairs that we don't really use, but three that we use every day.
Graham's up to two hands.
I'm up to about six. There's three people live in our house.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Why you keep thinking of it, we've got three. We've got one in a bedroom and one in the living room, one in a in a front room type.
So you've got a 2-to-1 ratio, Graham, televisions to humans. We've probably got a 3-to-2 ratio.
We're the other way around. We've got four people in the house and only two tellies.
We're doing well.
You're doing well. And how many of the tellies are the big lead clunkers, the old 4x3s you haven't had the heart to throw out yet on the nature strip? Yeah, all of them.
Sorry. Haven't got my big widescreen yet.
Only one for us and the others are...
No, I've got a really big Sony set, one of the old 4x3s. I've had it for years and years and years, but I don't have the heart to throw it out, but yet I don't use it anymore. And I'm wondering what I'm going to use it for. Probably where this e-waste issue is going to come into it at one point. Probably when we move, because that's when you get rid of a lot of that stuff. You get ruthless, isn't it? When you move house, you end up putting it on the nature strip for someone to come and take for free home. If they can pick it up, you need three people to pick this one up. So
you do have to get ruthless, though, don't you? You've only got a finite amount of space for stuff on this earth, and once you fill it up, that's it.
Yeah, I don't believe in that at all.
You know, we've had this argument before, JD, haven't we?
Well, your sprawl. Do you have a special like room for your collection of in the orchard?
Yes.
Yeah,
the apple orchard. That's your apple collection.
Yes.
It started out as a shop. I haven't been to your shop for many years.
You can't fit in there.
You used to be able to walk through it. At all the technology there.
Once upon a time, you could walk through it. Now you can't. The corridors are now full of stuff to the ceiling as well. I just added another two machines to the collection yesterday, as it happened.
Well, where did they come from, for example?
Well, someone on a forum that I frequent said that they were available, so I...
At the right price?
Yes.
Very good.
Can I just mention something of the nature of breaking news? And this is unconfirmed, but it comes from our correspondent in New South Wales at Gold 1611. He's saying that there's been a lightning strike as a result of this storm in Sydney that's taken out one of the main transmitting towers up there, so causing all kinds of disruptions to radio traffic and communications in the Sydney area.
Yeah.
So I've been unable to confirm it anywhere in the last 10 seconds that I've tried to search, but there might be something really really nasty going on up in Sydney at the moment.
Well, those TV transmitters in Sydney are they're obviously high up in the right
A little bit
month.
Unexposed position.
Yeah, you know.
That's where you tend to put those sorts of things, isn't it?
That's
right,
correct.
On tops of the biggest hills.
That's correct.
And where they work best.
And they're pretty close to pubs up there too, so there'll be a lot of people.
Oh, okay.
Because the one that Channel 7's on is on the corner of Pacific Highway and Mowbray Road near the Great Northern Hotel.
Ah.
And you sort of sit in the beer garden and you look straight up at this thing radiating millions of watts going, wonder if that's doing my body any good. And then you can see a bottle of lightning go straight through.
You know better radio theory than that, Andrew.
And you wonder why your beer frothing even more.
Absolutely. It was funny. I was on ABC Radio the other week, not in Sydney actually, in Adelaide, and we were talking about just that very thing about electromagnetic radiation. We got awfully distracted. We were talking about other things as well. But
Warlock says Channel 9 is working on Foxtel. Does that come out of Sydney, does it? I'm ignorant.
All of Foxtel comes out of Sydney.
Does it? Okay. Yep, I'm ignorant to Foxtel things.
Yeah, no, likewise. They were talking about how ignorant we all are in the chat there because none of us here have Foxtel or anything like that. So.
There's been a couple of people have said Channel 9 itself is working, but maybe there's some other things have gone wrong that are hosted on the same tower.
All right, Manic Minute time. Here we go. Ready?
Your time starts now.
Modified Xbox consoles flood eBay after a Microsoft ban.
Yeah.
Did you hear about that?
I did hear about that.
Yeah, apparently there's trouble there. We might talk about that next week.
Microsoft banned a small percentage.
Come on, you're cutting into my minute.
Oh, off you go. Sorry.
No, off you go. You've got to tell them now.
A small percentage has been banned by Microsoft who have been found to be in possession of Xbox 360 consoles.
So this stuff has been modified. Connecting via the network, doesn't
Correct.
It?
Correct. Yeah, Microsoft have blocked them on the internet. Webs.
Uh-huh.
Okay, the New South Wales has unveiled a new ID theft laws. So if you steal someone's ID in New South Wales, watch out. They've got new laws. Which will do that. Microsoft's Office 2010 Beta 2 and Office web applications are obviously set for public release this week. So if you want to live on the edge, head to your local Microsoft site. You might be able to download a beta of it.
There's info out there about Exchange 2010 as well.
Yes. Google launches a new television channel called Go. Launches Go programming language.
Oh, okay.
So there's something else there to have a look at. And Australia's fastest supercomputer was unveiled in Canberra just today too. And what else have I got here on the bench? I have the Rickrolling stuff. We did that earlier. Finally, Twitter to launch a paid service for business. So there you go. Stuff we haven't got around to talking about today on today's show.
I also hear that the Chrome operating system might not be too far from release either.
Oh, there's rumour and speculation. Mm. Oddspot, gadget and website of the week coming up after this.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio, proudly sponsored by D-Link, building networks for people.
Suffering Succotash, this has to be the best technology show on the internet, Tech Talk Radio.
Let's face it, Telstra has a huge PR problem.
It's called the Integrated Public Number Database.
Hopefully that's not what they're talking about.
No. Do you block them, do you?
I do.
Yeah, this is what happened, yeah.
This is what happened.
Yeah.
Look at that.
Yep.
Good use of technology.
Adam, you're too far gone to be saved now.
Entertaining.
How can you work in IT and not drink coffee?
Informative.
Often a techie propeller head, Vicky.
Independent.
The SMS is not an on-time delivery system.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
And if you get Inga from Sweden showing up.
Listening to Tech Talk Radio.
In this house, we obey the laws of thermodynamics!
Cool! This thing is amazing!
Tech Talk Radio's Gadget of the Week.
Out of my own!
Well, everybody knows I'm a Mac user and I'm used to the one-button philosophy.
You didn't have left click before, did you?
No.
Or right click.
Have they still not put a second button on that mouse?
No, but you can get the Mighty Mouse does all sorts of wonderful things now. However, the Open Office mouse is out and about. It's got 18 buttons.
18?
18 buttons.
And a joystick and a scroll wheel. Comes with 512K of memory in it, inside the mouse. Works on... Works on Windows, Linux, Mac, PS3s, apparently.
It's not an April Fool's Day one, is it?
No, no, surely. It exists.
What, Oddspot? No? Okay.
It's quite large. It's 110 by 68 by 43 millimetres. It's distributed by a range of players, including War Mouse, for around US$75. So if you want an 18-button mouse...
I just wanted to show off.
The Open Office mouse, 18 buttons, ready for your gaming pleasure now.
Here it is, everybody. The world's greatest website.
Tech Talk Radio website of the week.
Thank you to Levi, who was on our chat earlier in this program, and he's contributed the website of the week this week, www.buddyway.com, BUDDYWAY.com. BuddyWay is a fledgling community of people who have GPS receivers in their telephones, in their cars, and they want to plot where they're going, what trips they've taken, and they want to share that information with friends so you can track and save your trips automatically. What you do is you register at buddyway.com, download a small application, install it on your phone or your mobile device, and it will automatically, at whatever period you specify, upload your location and plot your trip on an online map using Google Maps. That's cute.
I'm just trying to think of a use for it.
You. But only because you want Big Brother to watch you, Graham. You don't have to subscribe if you don't want to. I know you're paranoid about these things. It's okay. Just let it all go. So it'll be all right.
You want another slap, do you?
No, please. No, that one the striker initiated before was sufficient for me this evening. That's our website of the week. Have a look if you're interested, if you're into that sort of thing. BuddyWay.com.
There is a fine line between genius and madness.
Missed it by that much. Nothing.
Don't ask! For God's sakes, don't ask!
Houston, we have a problem.
The Oddspot on Tech Talk Radio.
A 19-year-old New York man who was arrested for armed robbery has been exonerated thanks to a status update he posted on social networking site Facebook. Mr. Rodney Bradford was arrested and held for 12 days in connection with a 17th of October armed robbery of two people in the Brooklyn housing project where he lives. But he insisted he was in Manhattan at the time of the crime, a claim he backed up by an update he made to his Facebook page from a computer in his father's Manhattan building, prosecutors said. A spokesman at the Brooklyn District Attorney's Office acknowledged that Facebook played a role in the dismissal of the charges.
Gee, that's a turn for the worm, isn't it? Normally it's Facebook that's getting people into trouble. Now it's getting them off.
Andrew, when you're overseas next year, I'll just get you to log on as me under my Facebook account from the United States. Yeah, just say, oh, enjoying the scenery over here in the US, and I'll go and do something, and you've created an alibi for me. Isn't that bizarre?
Yeah, that'd be
a
good.
A triumph of modern policing. New York's finest.
You said that with such a straight face too. That's our odd spot, Andrew, for this week.
Yeah, well, now you've let the cat out of the bag. I will be in the United States next year reporting live.
Oh, we can have that bit out of the podcast. Sorry about that.
All right, I'll stop talking about that then.
Yeah, do.
You've been listening to Tech Talk Radio. I'm Andrew McComb. Three very able gentlemen in front of me. Hopefully we haven't scared off all the wee warriors tonight. Hello, once again, to people who go, what in the hell have we just listened to up there in Wiwa?
Good to have you on board, yeah. Very on 16.
So, welcome aboard, everybody. Until next week, we'll try and do this again. We've only got a few shows to go before Christmas, so send us your emails and all that sort of stuff. Tell us what you want on the Christmas shows, and while we're on holidays and having a lovely vacation, we'll be thinking of you. Isn't that right, Dr. Ron?
That's right. Yeah. That's what it is.
Okay. Till next week, bye for now.
You've been listening to Tech Talk Radio, brought to you each and every week by a group of dedicated professionals from within the media, broadcasting, IT and telecommunications industries. The team consists of executive producer Andrew McComb, producer Dr. Ron, panellists Justin Dunlop, Graham Callaghan and Mark Diggins, expert opinion from Adam Turner, and our US correspondent is Lydia Davis. Post-production facilities courtesy of Evolving Communications, podcast production by Graham Callaghan. Tech Talk Radio is broadcast, recorded and streamed live to the world each and every Monday night at 8 p.m. from the studios of 3WBC. The crew wish to thank all the stations around Australia that take the show. Tech Talk Radio is available for syndication on your local station. For sponsorship and advertising, call 03 9818 2756 or visit our website techtalkradio.com.au for more information. This has been a production of Tech Talk Radio Vic and is subject to copyright and applicable laws and may not be rebroadcast without approval.